Today I want to speak to you about what I've learned in preparing for our Blackburn Bible Student's upcoming study in the 6th chapter of Revelation. And I've noticed that quite a few brethren in the various classes have also taken up the study of Revelation. This seems to be a sign of the times we live in. God didn't reveal much in the past times about the symbols and the pictures given in this precious book. But as the end of the age rolls in, I can see that God is revealing more and more of his precious truths, and anyone who has an ear to hear will be looking for these precious truths as God allows them to be understood. I am sure many of you will be able to teach me more about this topic than what I present here today, and please feel free to come talk to me. This between brethren, we are all seeking the blessing that comes from reading and listening to the words from this book, as it says in Revelation 1:3, that blessed is the one who reads the words of this prophecy, and blessed is it, and part is written by me. In Revelation chapter 5, we saw him who will want to be the word to take from him, and until the scroll closed. And Revelation 5 is that one of the elders said to me, not weep, the lion tribe of Judah triumphed. He was able to open the scroll and its seven seals. Later on, in chapter 6 of Revelation, the seven seals are in that. And seven seals down chapter further on, the last three of the seven seals have nothing to do with horses or horsemen. So due to a lack of time, I will only go through verse 1 to 8 of this chapter and look at the of each of these horses and horsemen and see how they relate and come to us. I don't have time to go into deep detail in the discourse here, but I hope this encourages you to study this topic yourself. We'll see it's traditionally called the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Most people in the nominal churches believe that these events that are going to happen, that they will happen at the end of the world or the end of the age. They think that the four horsemen are part of the final battle of Armageddon. I will be referring to a number of commentaries of various brethren as I go along, and I used up to 11 commentaries, as well as the reprints and the volumes. And I'll be picking the thoughts that most appeal to me, and sometimes I might put forward contrasting thoughts. Let's read these eight verses in our study. Revelation chapter 6, and starting at verse 1. I watched as the Lamb opened the first of the seven seals. Then I heard four living creatures say in a voice thunder, come. I looked, and the fourth white horse, its rider, the bow, was the crown, and he put out a conqueror conquest. In verse 3, when the Lamb opened the second living creature said, another horse came out, fear, its rider was power to tame the earth and to make men slay each other. To him was given a large sword. Verse 5, when the Lamb opened the third seal, heard the third living creature say, come, I looked, there it was a black horse. Its rider was holding a pair of scales in his hand. Then I heard what sounded like a voice among the four living creatures saying, a quart of wheat for a day's wages and three quarts of barley for a day's wages, and did not damage the oil and the wine. In verse 7, when the Lamb opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature say, come. I looked, and there before me was a pale horse. Its rider was named Death, and Hades was following close behind him. They were given power over a fourth of the earth to kill by sword, famine, and plague, and by the wild beasts of the earth. So let's look at the first verse of this chapter, remembering that the verse in Revelation 5:9, when God gave the scroll to Jesus and the elders and creatures, and they sang a new song saying, you are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals. And Revelation 6:1, and I saw the Lamb opening one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder. One of the four beasts saying, come and see. So one of the four beasts said, come and see. And this is like God himself giving permission to all of heaven, as well as a special class of people represented by the Apostle John, to draw near and see the things that would happen hereafter. God was showing them secret things that belong to God, and is only with permission that anyone will enter them. Let's look at the symbols used in this verse. The Lamb. I think all of us would agree that this is Jesus. The noise of thunder. Well, if we think of an omnipotent and God who has endless energy, that this could be the Lord's displeasure or a proclamation of trouble. And one of the four beasts or creatures, well, from what I understand, that's represents the four attributes of God in Rashi 4:7. That the first looks like a lion, says there, the second like an ox, the third face like a man, the fourth was like a flying eagle. So we interpret these creatures to represent God's wisdom, might, justice, and love. We could apply this same order to the beasts as they speak in Revelation 6. If so, it would be the lion roaring, and so much of the brunas, whether the lion presents God or his power. The seals. As each seal is opened, more knowledge of God's plan becomes available. So we would call this meat in due season. The seals generally correspond with the seven stages of the church in chapter 2 and 3, not necessarily entirely synchronous. The opening of the first seal would represent the first truth, the very first seal sent upon high and opened then. All seals had opened, but not until the last seal was broken, the door fly wide open, permitting the mystery of God to be fully disclosed. We read in Revelation 7. And there it says, but in the days when the seventh angel is about to sound his trumpet, the mystery of God will be accomplished. Now, in one of the reprints, Brother Russell tells us, this is reprint 2 on 5:6, since glorification, the Lamb has been breaking the seven seals, and thus opening the divine plan before men and angels. And we are now, we now are privileged to share this knowledge more abundantly than others, because the last seal, having been broken, the scroll is open to all that follow the Lamb in love and obedience and meekness, and the mystery of God is just about finished. And another comment from the reprints tells us, the opening of the seals has progressed during all the Gospel Age. The whole plan of God is represented in this book, the scroll. It has required all of the present age and will require all of the next age to complete the plan. The plan of God includes the restitution of all things. We are now able to see these wonderful things and to tell about them, because each of the seals, as it has been opened, has made the plan a little bit clearer. The Southern Wisconsin Bible students, they suggest that the seven seals will be showing us the religious history of the falling away of the false church. So the big church throughout the last 2,000 years, it'll show its history, okay, and how it fell away from being close to Christ. We will see the step-by-step downfall of the church and the corrupting of the truth in these pictures and seals that we see. Brother Frank Chaloux says, the vision of this prophetic scroll clearly indicates A, the Creator's foreknowledge of history before it happens, prior to fulfillment, and B, his intention to assure the faithful that no matter how surprising the developments about to arise, somehow behind all of them an ultimate benefit would accrue. So let's look now at the white horse, Revelation 6 and verse 1 and 2. So we've already read verse 1. So we watched as the Lamb opened the first of the seven seals. And verse 2 says, I looked and there before me was a white horse. Its rider held a bow and he was given a crown. And he rode out as a conqueror bent on conquest. So in short, we see the meanings of the symbols to be the white horse, pure doctrine, the rider, the early church, the crown, that means God's approval, and the bow, a warrior sent forth to conquer. And as we mentioned earlier, Jesus opened the first seal as soon as he ascended on high. And this picture we see here would be from Pentecost onwards. The truth was pure then, straight from the lips of Jesus and the apostles. Horses, as we know in the Bible, symbolize doctrine. And the fact that it was a white horse would mean pure doctrine. The rider seemed to represent the early church. The bow indicates him to have been a warrior sent forth to conquer as Roman soldiers, etc. in those times. And the crown indicates him to be divinely accredited by God to go forth in the fullness of consecration against the forces of evil. The warrior upon the white horse is a representation of the true and faithful servants of Christ in the early church, as in obedience to his commands, they went forth on their mission and proclaimed the pure truth, the word, causing eventually the overthrow of pagan idolatry and bringing many of its adherents to yield willing and glad submission to Christ, their King. It evidently has reference to the rapid spread of gospel truth in the first and second centuries during the Ephesus period and the beginning of the Smyrna period. Let's look at the similarities between our verse in Revelation 6:2 and several verses in Revelation 19:11. So our verse says, "And I saw, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat upon him had a bow, and a crown was given him." Now if we look at Revelation 19:11, it says, "I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat upon him was called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he does judge and make war." And we see that in the 14th verse of chapter 19, that the armies of heaven were following him, also riding on white horses and dressed in fine linen, white and clean. So our verse in Revelation 6 represents the early church in its pristine purity under the headship of Jesus. And the second set of verse to this and to his God's service. And so we see similar symbols being used, okay? And symbols, and if we could see the text like similar. Now let's look at the red horse. When the second living creature came, then another horse came out, a fiery red one. Its rider was given power to take peace from the earth, to make men play each other. Let's look at some of this. Now see that the horse is red in color instead of white. The rider now has a sword instead of a bow, and he doesn't wear a crown. All this is very significant. If the white horse represents pure doctrine, then the red horse must represent false doctrine. And the rider being equipped with a sword suggests that he's a fighter at very close range. And he doesn't have a crown, seems to say that he's not approved by God. It appears that this rider on the red horse was intended to represent the nominal Christian church and its false doctrines. Among these false doctrines is one concerning the kingdom itself. They said the kingdom's already here, and we know it's not. And that was 2,000 years ago, 1,500 at least. Yeah, and it taught that Jesus was part of a trinity. That doesn't equate for us either. And the nominal church represents a special clergy class, you know, like popes and bishops and all that. And they're separate from the normal brethren who sit in the pews. So we found then that the persons who were given the title of bishop after a while started to use their office as a means of carrying out their own selfish purposes. And they claimed, of course, that God sent them and it's from God's will. In the early part of the 6th century, this accumulated in the usurpation of power by the Bishop of Rome. He said, he's the boss, he's the head of all the churches of the world. And the power assumed and exercised by these so-called bishops, it brought discord, strife, and division in the church instead of peace, concord, and unity. The sword here doesn't represent the truth, but rather a weapon for offensive warfare with which the rider would be able to take the peace from the earth and to bring about the killing of one another. And this he did by ways of persecution, the Inquisition, the rack, burning at the stake, and the killing of one another. So let's move on with this false church. We see next the black horse, Revelation 6, verse 5 and 6. "Then the Lamb opened the third seal, and I heard the third living creature say, 'Come.' I looked, and there before me was a black horse. Its rider was holding a pair of scales in his hand. Then I heard what sounded like a voice among the four living creatures saying, 'A quart of wheat for a day's wages.'" That meant a penny then, it said in the King James Version. "And 3 quarts of barley for a day's wages, and do not damage the oil and the wine." So let's look at a few of these symbols here. The rider of the black horse was the same as that of the red horse, but instead of having a sword, he now had a pair of balances in his hand with which to weigh out or measure out his commodity, which was wheat and barley. The difference in the color of the horse, it was now black instead of red. It signifies a further deterioration of the doctrines of the nominal church system that had taken place. Black being the opposite of white, it suggests that the doctrines were now completely devoid of light and purity. The Catholic Church had gained for itself the reputation of chief arbiter of all things in both church and state, I sit as a queen, Revelation 18:7. As the antitypical Jezebel, she had already mixed her leaven with the three measures of meal, as we read in Matthew 13:33. Jesus there said another parable, that the kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed into a large amount of flour, or, as the King James says, three measures of meal, until it worked through all the dough. So here in our Revelation 6 study, it said, do not damage the oil and the wine. Oil pictures the Holy Spirit of God, and the wine pictures pure doctrines. And these are not to be damaged for the true saints, and not to be contaminated for them, for the true believers that existed back then. Yet for the nominal church, their oil and their wine was limited, and it was corrupt. Wheat was used as food by most of the people, whereas barley was used for the cattle and by the extremely poor. Wheat and barley as foods, therefore, are symbols of our spiritual food, the truth. The penny, the Roman denarius, was a day's wages for the common laborer. Thus we have the thought that the truth during this period covered would be expensive to buy, and it would not necessarily be pure and wholesome as a food. In McClintock's and Strong's Encyclopedia, it says that the balances are a symbol of scarcity. Bread by weight is a curse, and you can read about that in Leviticus 26 and Ezekiel 4. The scales show a curse upon the nominal church, a want and scarcity of spiritual food, the Word of God, and of course, the innocent, the true saints. They were called upon to suffer, even though their oil and wine was wholesome and pure. And isn't it this way today? We need to put work into finding our spiritual food every day. The truth that then was so hard to find and very impure. And today we have the opposite. We have so many commentaries, Bible versions, discourses to listen to, a real richness of material and a total abundance. And maybe our problem today is to know how to sort out the good from the bad and the pure from the impure in its abundance. It still takes a lot of hard work to find uncorrupted spiritual food by the grace of God's Holy Spirit. In Reprint 2635 it says, all holy doctrines was contaminated with the false church's doctrines. Nothing was left pure and clean as handed to us originally by the apostles. The faith once delivered to the saints was distorted out of all resemblance to its original simplicity. The hope set before us in the gospel was changed to another hope entirely. Unlike the original, the spirit of the Lord, love, was perverted to selfish love of creeds of men and human institutions. No wonder all Christendom is spiritually sick because of this adulteration in its food supply. And Brother Streeter says that they didn't preach Christ and the Word. They substituted forms and ceremonies instead. They introduced at this time into the church formal fastings, celibacy, and asceticism as a so-called means of sanctification. And that asceticism is like being a monk in a monastery and cut yourself off from the world and so like unreal and unnatural surroundings. And that would make you holy. So let's look next at the pale horse, Revelation 6, verse 7 and 8. Then the Lamb opened the fourth seal. I heard the voice of the fourth living creature say, come. I looked, and there before me was a pale horse. Its rider was named Death, and Hades was following close behind him. They were given power over a fourth of the earth to kill by sword, famine, and plague, and by the wild beast of the earth. This fourth rider sat on the pale horse. Translators seem to agree that pale can be interpreted the ghastly green of terror and of death. And this horse, as the previous two, the red and the black, represent the grim and macabre doctrines of the nominal church of this period. As for the rider, we are this time given his name. He's called Death, and also his fellow traveler is called Hell or Hades. We are not specifically told if this second traveler rode on another horse or if they were both on the same horse. The chief rider was the same as had sat upon the red and black horses. It was the nominal Christian church, the papacy. The fact that the riders had the name of death and hell seemed to indicate how power would be used over a fourth part of the earth, which could symbolize Europe. So, and there would be killing with the sword, and with hunger, and with death, as it says in our verse. And if we look back in history, it seems to well fit these pictures. It is estimated that papacy during the past 1300 years has directly or indirectly caused the death of 50 million people. It can be safely said that human and satanic ingenuity were taxed to their utmost to invent new and horrible tortures for both the political opponents and the religious opponents of Antichrist. And the latter, they were called heretics. These religious opponents of the Antichrist were called heretics. And they were pursued with tenfold fury. Besides the common forms of persecution and death, such as being stretched on the rack or burned or drowned or stabbed or starved or shot with arrows and guns, and this is what they did all the time, the fiendish hearts meditated how to torture people. And in the second volume, it really lists all the details of these tortures and so if you want to look at page 346, you can read it for yourself. We don't read half of it. Do we have a few minutes, or what time is it now? Yeah. Okay. So I was going to finish this discourse right here, and I was going to finish off with these words that I hope that it's of interest for you, and it encourages you to look in to the Word of God spoken to us in this most holy book. And there was a few other things, and I wasn't sure if I had time. So I was going to include details of this, but I didn't think I'd have time. So just very quickly, that as a general overview, if you look at the material we have here, and next slide here, we can see that there are seven churches. So you can see the number on the left side going from 1 to 7. And most of us would agree that that would be dividing up the gospel age into 7 parts. And we are in the last part, Laodicea. And then you look at the 7 seals. So look at the seals and look down that column. We can see that there's the white horse, the red, the black, and the pale. And that would correspond with up to the 4th church. And then you can see there's trumpets also later in Revelation in chapter 8 and 9 and even 11. And those would correspond also from the majority of brethren seem to indicate that in their studies. And really, these topics are so complex and there's so much history to study that you have to take, I think the Lord provided the work of the other brethren in this last 20 years probably, 30 years maybe. So Brother Shalu a long time ago, and since then other brethren have put work in it, including Brother Duran and Brother Rice lately. That's a very new one. And so we need to use the work, I think. We can't do it myself, because it's big. Well, for most of us anyway. It's just too much work, and life doesn't allow us to. So I think as a first hit, you start looking at commentaries, you think through them, and this is what the brethren have come up with. As we can see, that there is a correlation from 1 to 7 of the churches, from 1 to 7 of the seals, and 1 to 7 of the trumpets. And if brethren think otherwise, we'll listen, because we can learn. And slowly, as you make this your own, then you progress from this point. And very, very useful information. There's lots more information. It sort of says about the phasing of different things, and there is some variance between some of the brethren. But it takes a bit of reading. The most significant thing of the seals, though, that it does. Brother David Dinwoody, also there's in one of the commentaries, comments of various brethren who aren't like big names, I guess, but they've done studies and they've prepared, and he thinks that the seals have the message to the churches, and so there's the message of the churches, there's the seals, and also there's 7 parables in Matthew chapter 13. So 7 parables which line up also with these churches and seals and trumpets. So there's another layer of information you can digest into your studies and prove to yourself whether you agree or not. But anyway, I'd like to leave this.